We do a lot in our effort to be happy. Check out Amazon and you'll find more than 2,000 titles with advice about what brings us happiness. We also try to increase our happiness with medication, lots of medication, from Prozac to Paxil to Zoloft. There are more than 120 million prescriptions for antidepressants out there. And don't forget illegal drugs, a $400 billion industry that makes up about 8% of world trade, with millions of people using illegal drugs in their quest for happiness. Well, those facts come from happiness expert Nancy Etcoff. She's an assistant clinical professor at Harvard Medical School and a cognitive researcher who studies the science of happiness and beauty. She'll be speaking tonight at Mass General Hospital as part of Boston's Hub Week. And WBUR is the Hub Week media partner. And Dr. Nancy Etcoff, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being here. I love this subject. And listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. What makes you happy? Is it love? Is it work? Is it money? What questions do you have about what it takes to be happy and about the science of happiness? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Doctor, I would love to start with the state of affairs. How happy are we really? Because all those titles on Amazon that you made reference to in a TED Talk a few years ago would suggest that people are working really hard to figure out how to be happy. How are we doing? What does the research say?
Well, I think we're doing about the same as ever. If you look across many nations and try to track global happiness, on a 10-point scale, you'll find between 6.5 and 7. So we're not generally unhappy. We're not at the top of happiness. But people want to pursue happiness. Yeah. And we know, particularly in this country, people always want to be happier and are looking for advice how to do so.
Well, I want to get into some of that, but I'm interested also in this fact about how we try to medicate ourselves toward happiness. As you mentioned, 120 million prescriptions for antidepressants, not to mention all those illegal drugs. Has any of this helped? Is there any way to measure that?
Well, antidepressants have helped a certain number of people who are clinically depressed mm-hmm. who take them. There's less evidence on people who take them who are not clinically depressed. And among those who are depressed, there's a bit of a placebo effect for some people as well.
Hmm.
So I don't think one would take Prozac to become happy. One would take Prozac to become less depressed.
Yeah. And what about your field? I learned from your writing that Freud said the pursuit of happiness is doomed. So why did he say that? And what kind of legacy did that leave behind for us to struggle with?
Yes, he said that the pursuit of happiness is a doomed quest, that it is part of a kind of early primitive feeling that we can somehow surmount all of life's difficulties. And so what he suggested instead, you know, was ordinary misery, which maybe is not what his patients thought they were coming for. Mm. But in other words, being able to adjust to the normal ups and downs of life. He did not see the quest as being for greater happiness. As time has gone on, others have looked in different ways, but his idea was to track the sources of the ways that people become maladjusted to the world they live in.
I see.
And
just
unhappy.
To accept that we are going to live with a certain degree of ordinary unhappiness.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that is our fate.
Sounds pretty grim.
Yeah, so that didn't initiate the happiness movement at all. It was a realist, sober realization, of course, written by someone, you know, who was experiencing a world of war and very poor environment conditions.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about sort of what the new science of happiness tells us. And there's an intriguing quote here. Happiness and unhappiness are not endpoints of a single continuum. So the idea here is that it's wrong to think that becoming less miserable is necessarily what makes us more happy, right?
Well,
so this seems counterintuitive.
Yes. And so we often think of them as on a continuum.
Yeah.
So there's the pleasure-pain continuum. But in fact, when you're less miserable, and you can see this a lot with patients as well, you know, someone's less depressed, but are they now happy? Hmm. They're happy not to have the symptoms of depression. But happiness is about something else. It's about a kind of a joy in living. It's about savoring experience. It's about having a certain vitality. And that's different from simply your symptom went away, you're relieved, you're back to ordinary misery.
Oh, I see.
And so, you know, we tend to think of when you're happy, you can't be unhappy. But of course, there are mixed states. And of course, within happiness, we often look to increase that, to change the diverse range of happy feelings that we have.
So is it wrong? So it's interesting. So in other words, we should really be focusing, I mean, and this sounds sort of obvious when I say it this way, but so we should really be focusing on the ways, the things and the things we can do to be happier, as opposed to what we need to stop doing that makes us miserable? In other words, can we have them both together?
Yes. Well, I think we want them both together. Right? Yeah. I mean, clearly we want to fight what makes us miserable, but is that enough? Is it enough to get rid of, let's say, you're angry at someone and it's gone? Is there a way to think about it and also to use positive affect to help you recover from some of the negative feelings you have? So one of the problems with negative feelings is we can't let them go. They're problems to be solved. You're mad at someone or you're sad about something. You think about it over and over and over again. It doesn't dissipate. The average negative affect can stick around for like an hour. You can ruminate on it for 12 hours. If you have enough positive affect, can get yourself out of that cycle much quicker.
Listeners, we're talking to Dr. Nancy Etcoff. She's a cognitive researcher who studies the science of happiness and beauty. We're asking you to join the conversation. What makes you happy? What questions do you have about what it takes to be happy and about the science of happiness? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What about genes in all this? Because according to one idea, if you're unhappy, it's as difficult to become happy as it is to become tall if you're short, right?
Yes. So there is a genetic component to happiness, and people have done a pie chart where they say, you know, there's about a 50% contribution of genes, there's about a 10% contribution of circumstance, and about 40% of what are called voluntary activities, kind of terra incognita, that is being filled in by positive psychology. So basically the idea is that we come equipped with a set point, that for some of us, as William James said, we're born with a champagne bottle in our pocket. And those people find it very easy to be happy. They're right there towards the threshold. Other people are born more on the pain threshold. Any little thing can disturb them and bring up negative affect. It's more difficult to raise them up. It doesn't mean they can't be, but the question now is how much? We know that negative circumstances can make people more unhappy. Trauma can linger. What can we do to make people more sustainably happy?
All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit about what makes us happy. One of the things that you write about that I'm really interested in is the connection between exposure to nature and beauty and how that affects happiness.
Yes. And so there's more and more evidence about the effects of nature on happiness, a way of restoring our attention, sort of resetting our equilibrium, our physiology. I did a small study on flowers, and it was a mood study, and they didn't know this was part of the study, but they filled out mood questionnaires for a week. We said, thank you so much. If another week, we're going to give you a little gift. We either gave them flowers or something else. Those who got flowers, enjoyed them, looked at them in the morning, started to respond with more positive affect. And so people are now using flowers in hospitals as ways to speed recovery.
Wasn't there a study as well, and I'm sure I read this in the research that I was doing for this interview, that is someone was essentially looking at the effect of what happens to someone when they're recovering, looking at a brick wall versus out onto a beautiful
courtyard,
yeah.
And found differences in the amount of pain medication and the length of the stay, calling for nurses. So it seemed to have almost an analgesic effect.
Yeah. Well, this seems incredibly intuitive to me, the idea that exposure to nature and beauty and even a vase of flowers would have such an effect on happiness.
Yes. And so what I always say, if someone wants a quick boost, the best thing to do is go out, get a little exercise, and try to do it in nature. Go to the Charles River, go to a park. Because it's one of the quickest mood boosters.
All right. Well, Dr. Etcoff, let's take a couple of calls. Daniel is calling from Reading with a question. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to ask the doctor if she sees a value in practicing dialectical behavioral therapy and mindfulness and changing your cognitive, perception of the world. And if dialectical behavioral therapy is just good for the average person and not necessarily for personality disorder or depression?
Okay, well, that's an interesting question.
Thanks, Daniel.
I think mindfulness is very beneficial to anyone who is comfortable practicing it, and it's something that I use quite a bit in my practice. DBT is a very effective method for people with personality disorders. It can be used by people who don't. There are aspects of that that would be useful to anyone.
Hmm. Thanks, Daniel, for that question. Let's go to Eric, who's calling from Sandwich. Eric, you're on the air.
Hello?
So, oh, hi, Eric. You're on the air. Sorry, we threw to you probably a little prematurely there, but you're on the air now. What's your question?
My question has to do with basically like thoughts and emotions and which causes which, you know? Negative thoughts cause negative emotions, or do like negative emotions bring about, you know, bad cognitions, and same with happiness?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It seems like emotions often come first, but others will argue that the appraisal comes first. They're really intertwined in many ways, so that once someone, for example, feels upset, their mind will start going to all the other times they were upset. They'll dredge up a dragnet of memories. So emotions change us not only in how we feel, but how we act, what we remember, and the way our mind works.
Eric, thanks for that question. Nancy, what about relationships? I know you've done a lot of thinking and writing about this. We're social beings, so the importance of social relationships in our efforts to be happy.
Yes. They play a huge role. Mm-hmm. We have a fundamental need to belong with someone, somewhere. And it makes a huge difference if there's someone in your life who really gets you, who staves off a feeling that is really toxic to the self and the body, which is loneliness. So love relationships are very important. And people often will focus on the arguments and how to argue less. But what the research is finding is that it's little positive things that often keep a relationship in better shape. So, for example, something good happens to the person you're with. What do you do about that? Do you draw it out? Do you want to share the joy? Do you ask about it? Or you say, that's nice, or I'm not so sure that's good for you.
Mm-hmm. It seems like intrinsic in that idea is that it's allowing you to forget about yourself, right? You're putting your attention and your focus on someone else.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And focusing on what's good about the relationship, why you're in it to begin with, versus focusing always on the problems. So maintaining, keeping, growing friendships, love relationships of all sorts, couples, children, always will help. The only time when you're with other people and less happy than alone in surveys is when you're with your boss.
No surprise there.
Other than that, you're almost always happier with other people.
So if having a good close relationship with people or a person is one of the keys to happiness, does it then follow that people who are extroverted tend to be happier because they're going to find it easier to end up in relationship?
Yes, often extroversion is more associated with happiness, although introverts can find happiness with less relationships that are very deep. They might not want as many. Extroverts can just walk into a room and make friends with anybody, and so life is a little easier for them. For introverts, can have a lot of happiness in a quieter setting, but they have to kind of put themselves in an extrovert role in other situations.
Nancy Etkoff, let's go to Stephanie. She's calling from Wakefield with a question. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, I had a question for the doctor. And I was just wondering, you talked a little bit about the role of people in relationships and happiness. Can you comment on the role that animals or pets in relationships with people play in the happiness and joy and stress?
Stephanie, it's a great question.
It is a great question. As an animal owner, I own a little Jack Russell. I will say that she gives me a tremendous amount of happiness. And the studies will back that up, that relationships with animals can be very solacing. When animals, for example, dogs, will stare you in the eye, both you and the dog get a boost of oxytocin, the kind of cuddle hormone, very relaxing bonding. Dogs and other animals, if you take them out for walks, they increase your social life. People always want to talk to you. And actually, there's been studies when you pet your animal that your blood pressure goes down.
Hmm. Interesting. What about the link between money and happiness? Of course, we all like to believe, we grow up hearing that money can't buy you happiness, but But I've read some studies that, well, the right kind of money and spending money in the right way can actually have a relationship with happiness.
And I think that's true. I think that's true. So with money, depends how you spend it. Do you spend it on having experiences? Do you spend it on other people? Do you spend it just on conspicuous consumption? Things that you'll get sick of and get rid of, or just doing something to be competitive with other people. How you spend your money can impact people very positively with money.
Nancy, you've got a list that we've actually posted at RadioBoston.org, 7 steps to happiness. What are sort of the top 2 or 3 things on that list?
Yeah. I have different lists. So let me see the list that you have. Oh, this is from Trent. Yes. So one is to savor the moment. Look forward to an exciting event you've planned. But most of all, savor the moment. We take for granted when things are going right.
Yeah.
We often don't thank people. We often don't stay in the moment. We're on to the next one. Something nice is happening. Just pause and really be present. The next one is to take control of your time. Use your time to do the things that you love doing. We can waste so much time down the rabbit hole of the internet, following one thing after another. And at the end, we think, well, what do we do with those hours?
All right. Well, that's Dr. Nancy Yetkoff. She's a cognitive researcher who studies the science of happiness in beauty. She's also the author of Survival of the Prettiest, The Science of Beauty. She's giving a Hub Week talk tonight, 6 o'clock at Mass General Hospital, entitled Driving Ourselves Happy. WBUR, by the way, is a media partner of Hub Week. Nancy Yetkoff, thank you for coming in. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
And listeners, thank you. You can continue the conversation at RadioBoston.org. That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.